Welcome to the Darrell McClain Show. I'm your host, Darrell McClain, and let's get into our episode.
Simply search for the T-Bone and Chick Brew podcast, available wherever fine podcasts are sold.
The Darrell McClain Show is fully listener-supported, independent media that won't lead you to tribalism. You can get a membership for as little as $3 a month at www.patreon.com/TheDarrellMcClain Show.
We talk about a lot of serious topics on this show. One very serious topic is women's health. One company that stood out to me was VSlay.com because the owner is very transparent about her own struggles in the women's health department and has great customer service, great deals, and frequent sales. You can check her out, her great customer service, products about women's health, and frequent sales at www.VSlay.com. That is www.VSlay.com. Welcome to the show. Let's get into it. It is I solicit my patrons and loyal followers and friends, comrades, etc., compatriots, to send me clips of things that I find interesting. I would talk about this morning. Swolte, Taylor, the Warrior Princess, sent me something that is actually happening right now in the Commonwealth of Virginia. A professor at Old Dominion University is actually trying to normalize or destigmatize pedophilia. So the non-binary assistant professor at Old Dominion University attempts to normalize a phrase called minor attracted persons.
I use the term minor attracted person or MAP in the title and throughout the book for multiple reasons. First of all, because I think it's important to use terminology for groups that members of that group want others to use for them. And MAP advocacy groups like Before You Act have advocated for use of the term MAP. They've advocated for it primarily because it's less stigmatizing than other terms like pedophile. A lot of people, when they hear the term pedophile, they automatically assume that it means a sex offender. And that isn't true, and it leads to a lot of misconceptions about attractions toward minors. I've definitely heard the idea that you brought up, though, that the use of the term minor attracted person suggests that it's okay to be attracted to children. But using a term that communicates who someone is attracted to, it doesn't indicate anything about the morality of that attraction.
Women's grade facepalm. This is absolutely disgusting. It's sick. And the people of ODU, the students, the human resource departments need to address this immediately. I cannot believe a professor at such a distinguished university is actually trying to normalize pedophilia with the phrase minor attracted person. And for posterity's sake, let's go ahead and look up the term pedophilia. So, according to the dictionary, pedophilia means sexual feelings directed towards children. So, the question is, what is there to destigmatize? If you are an adult with a sexual attraction or sexual feelings directed towards children, there should be a stigma towards it. I wanted to study what the professor was saying to see if I had misinterpreted what was being said. So University Professor Alan Walker wrote a book about people who are attracted to minors, a group he believes is misunderstood, should be de-stigmatized. Walker is the assistant professor at Old Dominion University and author of the book Alone, Dark Shadow, Minor Attracted People and Their Pursuit of Dignity. So again, remember, minor attracted people is a pseudonym he has come up with to replace them being called pedophiles. So the correct title for the book should be A Long Dark Shadows, Pedophiles and Their Pursuit of Dignity. Now, Walker's book tries to challenge the widespread assumption that persons who are preferably attracted to minors, often referred to as pedophiles, and looks at the lives of non-offending minor attracted persons, a term used to describe the group because it's less stigmatizing than a word like pedophilia, according to Walker. In an interview, he actually made clear that abuse should not be tolerated. He had to throw that caveat in there and said that there's a distinction between a sexual attraction and acting to the sexual attraction. He goes on to say, from my perspective, there is no morality or immorality attached to attraction to anyone because no one can control who they are attracted to at all, Walker said in an interview. In other words, it's not who's attracted to that's either okay or not okay. It's our behaviors and responding to the attraction that's either okay or not okay. So one way, that was the end of that particular quote. So one way I would say we respond to people who are attracted sexually to children. Let me make sure I get the definition right again for pedophile. Sexual feelings directed towards children. One way we can make sure the people who have sexual feelings that they have directed towards children, we don't confuse the language. We call them exactly what they are. And that is pedophile. So the professor goes out of his way to obfuscate and say in another statement, I want to be extremely clear that child sexual abuse is never okay, but having an attraction to a minor, as long as it isn't acted on, doesn't mean that a person has those attractions is doing something wrong. Walker argues this group of people referred to as MAPS have an attraction they didn't ask for and would do anything to change. Well, one way we change this is by calling it is what it is and then pointing these people out and then taking them to get the medical, mental help that they need long term. We do not help them by coddling this behavior. We do not help them by saying something that is immoral is moral. We do not help them by normalizing it. What this is doing is trying to creep open the door into, you know, this is actually not that bad. This leads to conversations like, how young is too young? And I know exactly where this is going. This is nothing more than moral relativism dressed up in sociological research. This is disgusting. This is sad. This is dangerous. It's just one of these types of things where you have these professors always trying to write something provocative and groundbreaking and push the bounds, and so they can be featured in some silly medical journal. And so sometimes they have to say the most ridiculous and disgusting stuff. But this is something totally different. It's totally different because you have to think about this type of thing with a slippery slope argument. You have to look at it from that perspective. The same way that you could say that when Elvis Presley danced for the first time and it was allowed on TV, that opened the door to the dancing we see on TV now. Everything starts at one point, and by the time you look up, the ethics that you thought you had will be gone in society. One thing we can do is protect children. We can just let kids be kids. And like I said before, this is not innocent. What's trying to happen here is there's this purposeful plague around with, oh, you know, these people just think about kids sexually, but they don't do anything. He is trying to normalize that to want to open the door to, oh, well, you know, he tried to take care of it, and then that accidentally happened to that child, and that leads right up into, you know, this should just be normal. You know, the child wasn't hurt. They're still alive. You know, they liked it. It wasn't that bad. That is where this type of thing leads for their own ODU basically on their behalf released a statement, and the statement was just as ridiculous. The statement did not even try to address the issue. The statement reads, so listen to this word salad that was put out by Old Dominion University. As the academic community plays a viable role in a quest for knowledge, a vital part of that is being willing to consider scientific and other empirical data that may involve controversial issues and perspectives. Following a recent interview that gained national attention, Dr. Allie Walken has released the following statement. And so the school doesn't follow it, doesn't say anything about it. That's their statement. And then the next sentence is what I just said before. I want to be clear, child sex abuse is morally wrong and exclusive and inexcusable crime. And so, does that sound different than what was said earlier? You can't say it's morally wrong, etc., because it's not a moral issue. That's what he said. I have put the entire 28-minute interview in the show notes for people that want to look at what Mr. Doctor, Professor, Assistant Professor of Sociology, Dr. Allie Walken, had to say about destigmatizing pedophilia. And we need to do something about this. Old Dominion University is who you need to call. And I'll leave that in the show notes. I'll leave the phone number and everything about public affairs, media relations, etc. to get this, suss this out. So let's do what we can do to get this some national attention. So on from that topic to a less controversial one, jurors today actually hear closing arguments in the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. So prosecutors and defense lawyers are making closing arguments in the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, with 18-year-old's fate likely to go to the jury by the end of the day. Rittenhouse was 17 on August 25th, 2020, when he shot three people in Kenosha, Wisconsin, two of them fatally amid the unrest that followed the police shooting of Jacob Blake, the black Kenosha resident. Rittenhouse faces five counts, including first-degree intentional homicide for the killing of Joseph Rosenbaum, who was 36, Anthony Huber, who was 26, and wounding Gage Grazerks, who was 26 at the time. Rittenhouse has testified that he acted in self-defense. A sixth charge of unlawful firearm misdemeanor was actually dismissed today. So here's what to know. Prosecutors and defense attorney presented radically different depictions of Rittenhouse actions and motivations Monday. Prosecutors called him a chaos tourist whose recklessness cost two lives. Defense attorneys described him as a 17-year-old kid out there trying to help his community. The trial has featured 2 weeks of a time dramatic testimony as well as extensive footage of the shootings. Rittenhouse took to the stand itself last week and tearfully insisted that he had fired only to defend himself. Prosecutors have argued that Rittenhouse committed murder, pointing to the fact that while there was unrest on the streets of Kenosha that night, that only one person that killed anyone was the defendant. The trial has been marked by combative exchanges between Judge Bruce Schroeder and the lead prosecutor, Thomas Binger. Many of the judge's rulings have appeared to favor the defense.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
It goes without saying that this show does not happen without listener support. Support the Darrell McClain Show by going to www.patreon.com and getting a membership for $3. Or you can go to buzzsprouts.com/the Darrell McClain Show and hit the subscribe button and join there. Many ways to donate to the show. Independent media that won't reinforce tribalism. We have one planet. Nobody is leaving, so let us reason together. www.patreon.com/the Darrell McClain Show or go to Buzzsprouts and to the Darrell McClain Show and subscribe. So Rittenhouse's face is now in the jury's hands after prosecutors had their say in rebuttal to the defense closing arguments, because Kenosha County Assistant District Attorney James Krause used his rebuttal to cast doubt on claims by the defense that Robeson was a lethal threat to Rittenhouse. Quote, "We're supposed to believe that Mr. Rosenbaum is Jason Bourne or John Wick and is capable of killing with bare hands and deserving a treatment he got from the defendant," Krause said. He played a drone video of the chase between Rosenbaum and Rittenhouse and pointed out the wide open space of Chardon Road, where Rittenhouse, according to Krause, could have run to avoid confrontation. He said Rittenhouse did not even exhaust all his options to defend himself, hit him, kick him, knee him, anything else. He said the court recess for the evening just before 6 p.m. local time. Jury deliberations are set to begin at 9 a.m. local time on Tuesday. Now, Rittenhouse lawyer says the case against him is political. Richards, the defense lawyer, walked jurors through every person's testimony over the two-week trial, homing in on what he said was the inconsistency of some praising others for presenting evidence that Rittenhouse was justified in killing two people and injuring a third. The characterization of Rittenhouse was a familiar one, that was a civic-minded teenager with good intentions trapped in a no-win situation after being targeted by minors. Quote, "My client was a 17-year-old. His actions should be judged as a 17-year-old, Richards said. Richards and Rubinson was a mere 4 feet from Rittenhouse when he was shot. To illustrate, the lawyer used a tape to measure and to create distance between himself and the jury box, then made a lunging motion. I'm glad Rittenhouse shot him, because if Joseph Rosenbaum got that gun, I don't believe for 1 minute he wouldn't have used it on anyone else," Richard said. Richard summed up the case as political to protect rioters responsible for arson and destruction. Quote, "The district attorney's office is marching forward because they need somebody to be responsible," Richard said. "They need someone to say he did it. He is the one who brought terror to Kenosha." And that is going to be the pivotal question. Is Kyle Rittenhouse, the 17-year-old kid out there trying to help his community, or is he a vigilante trying to cause terror on people that he disagrees with? The prosecutor, by a prosecuting team, is going to have a hard uphill climb, because according to the Wisconsin law, you have to prove that somebody's intents were basically malicious, that they had a purpose, they were trying to kill somebody, and that they had not exhausted all the other means. And I think that it is, even though a lot of people have these very charged feelings around this, I do think that this Kyle has a good chance of walking away with by means of self-defense. So I made a statement on one of the social media platforms that I allowed one of my followers to message me, and we had a back and forth that I have had permission to share. So I made a comment that states, And I quote, "I believe Kyle will be innocent by means of self-defense, just like I believe Trayvon was trying to defend himself against a wannabe cop following him around in a car, even after dispatch told him not to do so. The difference in people's opinion is purely political, not legal analysis. It is so glaring to point out that for me to even be doing so is silly." So I got a message asking, first, why did I think he was acting in self-defense? I said because I watched the multiple videos of them pointing at guns at the young man first, and that a person had just testified that they pulled a gun out, and they can be seen on video pointing a gun at Mr. Rittenhouse. So the question that I got was, let me see. You have a 17-year-old coming to a state he doesn't live in with a weapon he's illegally carrying to insert himself into a hot mess, violating curfew, shoots an unarmed man, proceeds to run people around him, run from people around him to stop him, kills another, wounds one, all trying to stop an active shooter, and he claims self-defense. That's like someone robbing a bank, and he shoots someone trying to stop him, and a robber claims self-defense. He should have stayed home. Nobody asked or invited. So I responded by basically trying to lay out the facts of the case. So I pointed out the fact, I just said, you know, the kid drove 30 minutes with his parents, one who has been reported to be actually living in the town. One of the guys he shot actually drove 49 minutes to get there, and the other guy who was killed drove 45 minutes to get there. They would all been better at home. They were all violating the 8 p.m. curfew that was in place. The time he drove is irrelevant, so the fact around the gun is the only thing that matters. Is under Wisconsin law, was he defending himself? It has already been proven he didn't fire the first shot. And every video shows him running in a state that you don't have to retreat. The kid is going to walk. The sooner people understand that fact, the better off we all will be. So I then got the response that two wrongs don't justify his actions. As Wisconsin jury instructions read, a person who engages in unlawful conduct of a type likely to provoke others to attack, or who does not provoke an attack, is not allowed to use or threaten force in self-defense against their attack. Why is the wannabe cop mentioned wrong? He also claims self-defense, and this wannabe cop is right. This is kind of hypocritical. And Daryl, first shooting, he also said first shooting he ran towards and confronted an unarmed man. The guy rushed and shot him four times. And so I responded that breaking one law doesn't make you guilty of breaking other laws, and then he replied that you do admit now that he broke a law. And I said, yes, one was literally, and the difference between George Zimmerman and Kyle Rittenhouse is, I said, one was literally on the phone with police dispatch and got out of his car and chased someone. The other one is on video, and we could all see him actually running away from the people who are chasing him. The difference is so elementary that everybody can see it, and it's already been proven that he didn't fire the first shot. You could keep saying that he was the threat, but the FBI drone video shows the exact opposite. A shot was fired first, then he actually panicked, freaked out, and that's when he fired his shot. So the shot was proven that it wasn't fired by the man, he thought, and that is going to be the crux of the case. It is not the Monday morning quarterbacking what happened. It is going to be what Kyle's state of mind was at the time he pulled the trigger, at the time he shot those people. I want to get a listen to a professional take on this from a gun rights advocate who is also a lawyer. And I think that he has a very unique perspective because he did not engage in what a lot of people are engaging in, is the race reductionism, because Kyle Rittenhouse was at a protest because there was a protest involving the shooting of a black male. So it automatically came with a racial component there. And then because it was a Black Lives Matter protest and Kyle Rittenhouse is white, the racial components will not go away. It is a powder keg, and everybody seems to continually have kindling and matches wanting this to be about and solely about race. Even though the victims of Mr. Rittenhouse were not black men or any other person of color. So let's go to the legal analysis. And this is from a year ago, but I still think that this holds true.
From people wanting me to give my take on the Kyle Rittenhouse situation. Everything I'm about to say right now is based on all the information that is available right now as of August 28th, 2020. A lot of people are saying that Kyle Rittenhouse went to Kenosha looking for trouble, that he was a vigilante, that he was trying to play cop. And there are some people who are saying that he was just there to help protect property and protesters. So let's hear what he has to say on why he was there.
What are you doing out here? Obviously, you're armed, and you're in front of this business we saw burning last night. So what's up?
So people are getting injured, and our job is to protect this business, and part of my job is also help people. If there's somebody hurt, I'm running into harm's way. That's why I have my rifle, because I need to protect myself, obviously.
A lot of people feel some type of way about Kyle bringing an AR-15 with him to this protest slash riot. And I get it. Why bring a rifle to a peaceful protest? Well, sometimes protests turn to riots. And an AR-15 is one of the most effective self-defense tools in the world. That's why it's the most popular rifle in the country right now. I know seeing someone carrying an AR-15 makes some people uncomfortable, but also, you can't blame someone for wanting the best means of protection when they're going into what could turn out to be a dangerous and volatile situation. And let's be clear, there are a lot of protesters and rioters with guns at this protest slash riot. However, there is the issue of legality. Kyle is 17. In Wisconsin, any person under 18 years of age who possesses or goes armed with a dangerous weapon is guilty of a Class A misdemeanor. So on the surface, Kyle was carrying his rifle illegally, but Wisconsin law has an exception that says that this law only applies if the person has a short-barreled rifle or short-barreled shotgun, or if the person doesn't have a certificate of accomplishment to obtain hunting approval. Kyle may or may not have this certificate. He didn't have a short-barreled shotgun, and he didn't have a short-barreled rifle. I don't know if he had the certificate. However, my gut tells me Wisconsin wasn't trying to carve out an exception that lets minors open carry during a protest slash riot. And the other exception, for the most part, was speaking towards hunting. Then there are the people saying Kyle shouldn't have been there because there was an 8 p.m. curfew, and they'd be right. But that also means the protesters and the riots and everyone else shouldn't have also not been there. I'm not really a fan of any 17-year-old being at a protest slash riot. I know 40-year-olds who don't have the mental maturity to deal with the dynamics of a riot, much less an impressionable 17-year-old. But we send 18-year-olds to fight people in other countries. So I can't really say anything to a 17-year-old who wants to help protect businesses and people in his country. And there are a lot of people making a big deal about the fact that Kyle drove in from Antioch, Illinois. The drive from Antioch to Kenosha is 30 minutes. That's shorter than a lot of people's daily commute. Anthony Huber, the kid with the skateboard who was shot and killed, he lived in Silver Lake. That's a 30-minute drive to Kenosha. Gage, the guy with the gun, lived in West Allis, and that's a 49-minute drive to Kenosha. So it's safe to say that all of them should not have probably been there and just stayed home that day. But none of them did, so we're here. In Wisconsin, deadly force can only be used if a person reasonably believes that such force is required to avoid death or great bodily harm. There is no duty to retreat unless you are an initial aggressor. If you are the initial aggressor, you can only use deadly force if you reasonably believe all means to escape great bodily injury or death has been exhausted. Kyle was with a group of armed men guarding a gas station. I don't know why or how it started, but at some point, there was a confrontation between Joseph Rosenbaum. I don't know if it was just verbal, physical, or both, but there was some sort of confrontation between Kyle and Joseph. Now, at some point before the shooting, a guy by the name of McGinnis interviewed Kyle.
And then what about these guys up on the roof?
Their job is to provide overwatch to protect me also.
Gotcha.
They're protecting everybody on the team.
Understood.
And we're running medical. We're going in or we're getting control.
And what about, are you from the area?
I am from the area.
What brought you out here tonight? You just wanted to provide medical attention?
Provide medical attention to people that need it. Somebody's injured. Like, you get hurt, I'm grabbing you.
Have you encountered any issues yet thus far with law enforcement or anything like that?
No, so we went to the church and we de-escalated the situation, telling them they need to leave or they will be detained and arrested.
This church right over here.
And we stopped the fire out all the way down at school.
Wow. And do you think it would have been different if the police had to try to stop them from setting the fire?
I feel like there would be a lot more casualties and a lot more people injured. So I think the police are fine with their head. And I'm not sure the medical, because EMS is not coming in. So
they're
citizens, we need to help watch out with each other. Me and Emma are out here running and saying if we need medical attention.
But you got to watch me to go check to see if somebody got hurt again.
All right.
Understood.
If that follows, you're fine.
Yes, sir.
After the shooting, McGinnis was interviewed by detectives where he said before Kyle reached the parking lot and ran across it, Kyle moved from the middle of Sheridan Road to the sidewalk. And that is when he saw Rosenbaum trying to engage Kyle. As Kyle was walking, Rosenbaum was trying to get closer to Kyle. When Rosenbaum advanced, Kyle did a little juke move and started running. At the same time, there were other people that were moving very quickly, and they were moving towards Kyle, and that according to what he saw, Kyle was trying to evade all of these people. This then results in Kyle being chased by Rosenbaum, who then throws an object at Kyle. The object misses Kyle, and because Kyle's clearly not a very fast runner, the guy catches up to Kyle and corners him. And this is when Kyle shoots him. McGinnis is the guy in the video you see standing next to Kyle trying to help Rosenbaum. McGinnis told investigators that Rosenbaum was trying to get Kyle's gun. When asked by detectives if Rosenbaum had his hands on the gun when Kyle shot, McGinnis stated that Rosenbaum definitely made a motion that was trying to grab the barrel of the gun and that Kyle pulled it away and then raised it, and then right as they came together, Kyle fired. I think it's pretty reasonable to assume that if someone is chasing you and throwing objects at you, and then when you're cornered by them, they try to take your gun away from you, at best, you're at risk of great bodily injury, and at worst, risk of death. Also understand the aggressor in a situation could change in the blink of an eye. If Kyle was the initial aggressor, but is now running away like he is in the video, Kyle's no longer the aggressor. The person chasing him is, because Kyle running away from this guy is no longer a threat to this guy. So the dynamics of a self-defense can change instantly based on the conditions or continued actions of the parties involved. Once Kyle was running away, legally, the guy chasing him is now the aggressor. After Kyle shoots the first guy, he stays by the guy and makes a phone call saying that he just killed someone. As he's doing this, he hears, and you can clearly hear someone say, "Get that." And that's when Kyle takes off running again, because there is a group of people coming after him, as you can see here. At this point, Kyle is being chased by what is essentially a mob. To be fair, most of the people chasing Kyle at this point don't have the full context of what happened. But as is the case in a lot of these situations, there are a lot of bad actors who would take advantage of the chaos and engage in unnecessary violence. So they hear, "Get him, he just shot someone." And they see a white kid with an AR-15 running down the street, and they just attack without asking any questions. Here you see someone run up to Kyle and try to hit him with something, much the same way Rosenbaum did. difference is Kyle is not cornered, so he continues running away from the guy and the mob. However, a few seconds later, Kyle trips and falls to the ground. When this happens, you can clearly hear someone say, "Get his ass." At this point, Kyle has nowhere to go because as soon as he falls, they try to swarm and attack him, and his back is literally against the ground. Now, if Kyle just started shooting blindly, this legally would not have been self-defense, but he doesn't. He only shoots the people who are clearly attacking him. This was a group of people attempting to attack him because they felt that it was justified because all they know is that this guy just shot one of their people, so they're trying to do something about it. However, from Kyle's perspective, he just shot a guy who he felt was trying to kill him. And this mob thinks he murdered that guy in cold blood. And now they want to kill him also. And he can't get away because he's on the ground with nowhere to go. And all of this is being confirmed in Kyle's mind because right now there are literally people running towards him trying to physically attack him. He immediately gets attacked almost simultaneously by two guys, one of which is using a skateboard to attack him. No, a skateboard is not a weapon, but it can be used as one to commit serious bodily injury or death. And this guy is clearly trying to hit him with the skateboard. Not to mention, he's being attacked by multiple people at once. So Kyle shoots the guy with the skateboard and the other guy attacking him. Now, this is when Gage runs up on Kyle, but Kyle points the gun at him and he stops for a second. And then for whatever reason, he continues to run towards Kyle again. And so Kyle shoots him. But here's the kicker. This guy had a gun in his hand. And if we believe what his friend posted on Facebook, where he says, "The kid shot Gage as he drew his weapon and Gage retreated with his gun in hand. I talked to Gage, to his only regret, was not killing the kid and hesitating to pull the gun before emptying the entire mag into him." So again, legally, this is self-defense. Yes, the people attacking Kyle think he just murdered someone, but they are attacking him, not defending themselves from him to prevent death or great bodily injury. So under the letter of the law, they are the aggressor at that moment. And because they have disparity of force, i.e. way more people than him, and weapons or objects being used as weapons, Kyle is legally justified to use deadly force to stop them. So as a lawyer, unless some new information comes out that shows Kyle was the initial aggressor and he had a way to retreat, legally, I don't think he'll be convicted of murder. Personally, I wish he would have just stayed home. Hell, I wish they all would have just stayed home. But they didn't. Yes, Kyle probably broke the law in that he was a minor open carrying a firearm. However, Kyle breaking that law does not mean he forfeits his right to self-defense if it is justified. Much the same way, if I'm a felon and have a gun and I use that gun to protect myself during a home invasion, I'm still going to go to jail, but not for murder. It'll be for me having a gun as a felon because my use of deadly force with that gun, even though it was illegal for me to have, was justified. And here, from the looks of it legally, this was justified. I don't like it because it resulted in people being shot, but legally, his use of force was justified. Because of this, I think Kyle is basically gonna plead to the lesser charge of open carrying a firearm as a minor, but I do not see him being convicted of murder.
So the voice you just heard was the lawyer, Colin Knorr, who is also a first Amendment activists, and more importantly, the one that protects it, the Second Amendment lawyer. I'm going to put the entire video in the show notes because you can see as the video of what's going on in Kenosha as he is explaining. And if you like YouTube videos, he also has several YouTube videos that are more recent of him explaining his take on some of the things that happened in the courtroom, which is good because he not only knows about guns, he is a lawyer himself. So on tomorrow's episode, I got some news about the former president, some Trumpland stuff, including his former... I actually forget what Steve Bannon was in the administration. He was very, I want to say he was like a political advisor. But nonetheless, Steve Bannon was indicted for contempt of Congress, and today has actually turned himself over to the FBI. So I'm going to put all that in tomorrow's show. I want to actually do something somebody asked me to bring back that I haven't done in a while. And so I'm going to start back doing the Blast for the Intellectual Past. And so if you guys have found something interesting from the past, I'll put a stamp on it. So let's say minimum of 2 years in the past that you think is worth hearing again, send me that clip and I'll start playing those as a part of the show. So again, thank you for tuning in. Tomorrow is going to be, we're going to take a dive into the Republican Party. A lot of the questions around their plans upcoming, why they seem to be opposed to the voting bills, Trump administration's official elite campaign stuff that the federal investigation has talked about, and stuff about some of these House records that a judge has said can be turned over. And Trump, even though he's not on Twitter, is still very active when it comes behind the scenes in a lot of Republican Party politics. So I'm not going to pretend like that the former President Donald Trump is not still the titular head of the Republican Party. So all that and more on tomorrow's episode of the Daryl McClain Show. And of course, if you always want to support the show, independent media that won't reinforce tribalism, you can do so by going to www.patreon.com/the Daryl McClain Show. And you can also, if you like to send me some articles and talk to me or say hello, follow me on Instagram, which is also at the Daryl McClain Show. See you on the next episode. Thank you for listening to today's episode. Of course, if you want to support the show, you can do so by going to www.patreon.com and getting a membership for as little as $3 a month. Again, that's www.patreon.com/the Daryl McClain Show. The Daryl McClain Show is fully listener-supported, independent media that won't lead you to tribalism. Get a membership and support independent media at www.patreon.com/the Daryl McClain Show.